Well, good morning to you. As Bob Cratchit said to Scrooge, I am a bit behind my time. So thank you for being patient. It's so good to see you this morning. It's a beautiful fall morning, and of course, I wonder if everyone knows that daylight savings time ended, but we'll see. Oh, well, it's always light before. Some people just don't like to hear the announcements, so they come a little later. We do have announcements, of course, some of them very pleasant. First, our Holy Mother's Helping Hands is going well. This is our food and clothing drive for the less fortunate. We're 2 months into this drive in cooperation with the Atlanta Food Bank. Our goal is 500 pounds of food and $1,800 in donations by December 31st. If you aren't already aware of this, each week's e-news has details and links for donation and also to get a flyer. But if you want to, flyers that specify what is needed are in the foyer next to the Atlanta Community Food Bank box. Also, there's a clothing rack on the monastery's sun porch where you can bring warm winter clothing for the homeless, and that will be much appreciated. So I'm very pleased with how well the drive is going. Thank you for all your help and cooperation. Next Saturday, November 10th, from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., will be Save a Saturday for November. Please join us for this service to your spiritual community. As always, lunch will be served for those of you who are here at noon. We go get some lovely vegetarian pizza from Mellow Mushroom. And speaking of food, we will celebrate Thanksgiving Day on Thursday, November 22nd from 1:30 to 3:30 p.m. Our potluck feast will be in the monastery's fellowship hall. Your center will offer the day's traditional dishes. Please bring other food, desserts, and beverages to share. And if you want to bring your own version of the traditional dish, of course, please bring that too. The more, the feastier. More details on the website, Facebook page, and in November's e-news. So please look there. As I said, we had some very happy news. Swami Atmarupanandaji will visit us from Friday, November the 23rd, to Sunday, November 25th. For those of you who don't know him, Swami Atmarupananda is a very senior Swami in the order. He's an American Swami, now posted as the resident minister in Houston, Texas. He's a dear friend for decades. He and I worked together on starting Vivekananda Retreat Ridgely, but I knew him even before that when he was in San Diego. He'll hold a Saturday retreat. The morning session will be on the basic principles of Karma Yoga. And when we talk about Atmarupananda talking about the basic principles, this isn't just Karma Yoga 101. He goes into really in some depth what it is that Krishna means in Sri Krishna means in chapter 3 of Bhagavad Gita. So the morning session, basic principles of Karma Yoga. In the afternoon, streams of practice in Karma Yoga. And then on Sunday morning, this is a talk that I heard him give some years ago, and of course it's only been improved since then. I cannot recommend highly enough for you to come on that Sunday morning and hear the Swami speak on Prabuddha America, Awakened America. That Sunday talk will be followed by a potluck lunch and reception for the Swami. And of course, we'll serve some of the leftovers we have from Thanksgiving. It's traditional to eat Thanksgiving leftovers on the weekend, but please bring anything else that you like. And then very happily, particularly for those of you who are wanting initiation, Swami Sarvadevanandaji will be with us from Thursday, December 20th to Saturday, the 22nd. There will be programs on both Thursday. There will be a program on both Thursday and Friday evenings after Arati, and a special talk on Saturday morning at 11 a.m. That talk will be on Holy Mother. Her celebration, her puja, will come on the 30th of the month. So just a few days before that, the Swami will talk about Holy Mother on that Sunday. On Friday evening, after the Swami's talk, as I said, Thursday and Friday after Arati, on Friday evening after the Swami's talk, we'll have a potluck supper and reception for him. If any of you do want to take initiation, mantra diksha from the Swami, please let me know by email right away. There's some preparation. Initiations may be done on the morning of Friday the 21st or Saturday the 22nd, as suits your schedule. So, does anyone know of something that should be announced that I missed? Anything, Lori? Can you think of anything? Nope? Okay. So, we'll start with our regular morning chant, our regular chant for starting the day. Om Sahana Vavatu, Sahano Bhunaktu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaditamastu, Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shantihi. And now in Swami Yogeshananda's lovely translation, may the Divine Being look over us lovingly as a mother and father. May the Divine Being support and nourish us as a mother and father. May we have the strength and skill to study together the art of spirituality. May no misunderstandings arise amongst us. Om, peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. Because this morning's talk is a rather more lengthy than might be, I'm going to not sing a song this morning. But if you can just think of the song, O Lord, Take My Hand, that song that is sometimes sung here, this will be... Just think of that song for a moment. As I say again, welcome. Thank you for coming this morning. The topic is The Master's Story, Part 2. If you remember, a little more than a month ago, I spoke about the story that Sri Ramakrishna suggests that we take as the story to undergird our civilization. This isn't the story of Sri Ramakrishna's life. It's the story we have in common, a story that we believe in. And as I'll talk about this morning, that story is disintegrating. But let me just say, this is part two of that talk, Masters. I'm not doing to repeat the same talk, but those of you who were here before, will you see the continuity? We'll just start with this. November is a month for the study of Karma Yoga, a spiritual path leading to the abandonment of selfishness. As a Karma Yogi, you practice offering your actions and their results, as well as your perceptions, thoughts, and feelings to the Divine Presence. Even before fully knowing this presence, you hold firmly to the belief that the presence is within each person or other living being that you interact with or serve. And this is a key idea. You'll see it's a key idea to what the rest of today's presentation is about. You hold firmly to the belief that the Divine Presence is within each person or other living being that you interact with or serve. Working and abiding in this spirit, you are increasingly able to release attachment to your activities and their results. This yields the freedom and contentment promised by Karma Yoga. As Sri Krishna says in chapter 2 of the Gita, even a little practice of this yoga will save you from the terrible wheel of rebirth and death. Even a little practice of this yoga will save you from the terrible wheel of birth and death.
Doesn't save you from the fear of the terrible wheel?
No, just, this is Swami Prabhupada's translation, so we'll leave it at that. The life and the society we share has many forms. One of the most persuasive is the system of agreements of the forms of the many forms. One of the most persuasive is the system of agreements, the complicated story that members of a civilization hold in common. These agreements are just a tiny fraction of a complex web of shared understanding about what our world is and how it works. Yet, for the present time, socioeconomic theorists like Peter Drucker, historians like Barbara Tuchman, scientists like Rachel Carson, and philosophers such as Charles Einstein tell us that our present civilization is in the midst of a major transformation, that our story is changing. This morning we will review what these and other thought leaders tell us about why the civilization we have known is disintegrating, and the story we have known no longer helps us live together successfully. Then we'll review what the saints of our lineage, Sri Ramakrishna, Holy Mother, and Swami Vivekananda, told us about the age that is dawning and the Master's story about that age. These are the basic lessons Sri Ramakrishna left us. When you understand my message, he said, reduce your reading and reasoning and start practicing. The basic message, the main message, is find God. That is the only purpose in life. We will explore these and other instructions in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. But first, let's hear from six people whose thinking and writing have had a notable influence on the intellectual thought currents of our society, both here and in Europe, during the past 50 years. First, Peter Drucker. The late Peter Drucker was a writer, a consultant, and a professor of social science at Claremont Graduate School in California. The Master's in Business Administration was his innovation. He wrote more than 20 books on social, economic, and political issues. This is from his essay, The Age of Social Transformation, published in the Atlantic Monthly in November of 1994. The megastate in which the 20th century indulged has not performed either in its totalitarian or in its democratic version. It has not delivered on a single one of its promises, and government by countervailing lobbyists is neither particularly effective, in fact, it is paralysis, nor particularly attractive. Yet effective government has never been needed more than in this highly competitive and fast-changing world of ours, in which the dangers created by the pollution of the physical environment are matched only by the dangers of worldwide armaments pollution. And we do not have even the beginnings of a political theory or the political institutions needed for effective government in the knowledge-based society of organizations. This was written in 1994 by Peter Drucker, and I encourage you to read that fully. You can find it online, The Age of Social Transformation by Peter Drucker. He has a lot more to say about what is unfolding, and we see it. He was so prescient, we're seeing it right now. I don't think this is a political talk. This is not about politics. This is about how we relate to one another as human beings. And as he said, we do not have even the beginnings of a political theory or the political institutions needed for effective government in the world that is emerging, which he called a knowledge-based society of organizations. Barbara Tuchman was very, very influential during her life. The late Barbara Tuchman was an American historian and author. She won the Pulitzer Prize twice and the U.S. National Book Award in History for her book A Distant Mirror, The Calamitous 14th Century. That title reflects Tuchman's idea that the death and suffering of the 20th century mirror that of the 14th century. This is a quote from Barbara Tuchman. Policy is formed by preconceptions, by long implanted biases. In other words, the story that already exists. Policy is formed by preconceptions, by long implanted biases. When information is relayed to policymakers, they respond in terms of what is already inside their heads and consequently make policy less to fit the facts than to fit the notions and intentions formed out of the mental baggage that has accumulated in their minds since childhood. This is why what Peter Drucker said is true. We're not having any institutions or policies that are fit to the current circumstances because we're still operating on this old story. Tuchman also said, the better part of valor is to spend it learning to live with differences, however hostile, unless and until we can find another planet. How likely is that? Joseph Campbell. Many of you know about Joseph Campbell already, I think. Joseph Campbell was known internationally as a mythologist and so on. What some of you may not know is that he was president of the East Side Vedanta Center, the Ramakrishna Vivekananda Center in New York City for some time. He was a disciple of Swami Nikhilananda, knew Adishwarananda very well, and he helped Nikhilananda with his translation of the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. So Joseph Campbell. The late Joseph Campbell was an American mythologist who worked in comparative mythology and comparative religion. His work covers many aspects of the human experience. Campbell is best known for his book, The Hero with the Thousand Faces, in which he discusses his theory of the journey of the archetypical hero found in world mythologies. Quote from Campbell. We must let go of the life we have planned so as to accept the one that is waiting for us. This is embedded in paragraphs where he talks about we must be able to let go of our old story and adopt a new story. We must let go of the life we have planned so as to accept the one that is waiting for us. Furthermore, we have not even to risk this adventure alone, for the heroes of all time have gone before us. The labyrinth is thoroughly known. We have only to follow the thread of the hero path. And where we had thought to find an abomination, we shall find a god. Where we had thought to slay another, we shall slay ourselves. Where we had thought to travel outward, we shall come to the center of our own existence, and where we had thought to be alone, we shall be with all the world. This is the story that he suggests, and you'll see it so clearly reflected. We have thought to be alone, but we shall be with all the world. Rachel Carson. The late Rachel Carson was an American marine biologist, author, and conservationist whose book Silent Spring and her other writings are credited with kickstarting the global environmental movement. Carson's bestseller, The Sea Around Us, won a U.S. National Book Award and recognition as a gifted thinker and writer. She wrote, "We stand now where two roads diverge. But unlike the roads in Robert Frost's familiar poem, they are not equally fair. The road we have long been traveling is deceptively easy, a smooth superhighway on which we progress with great speed. But at its end lies disaster. The other fork of the road offers our last, our only chance to reach a destination that assures the preservation of the earth. We still talk in terms of conquest. We haven't become mature enough to think of ourselves as only a tiny part of a vast and incredible universe. Man's attitude toward nature is today critically important simply because we have now acquired a fateful power to alter and destroy nature. But man is part of nature, and his war against nature is inevitably a war against himself. The human race is challenged more than ever before. The human race is challenged more than ever before to demonstrate our mastery, not over nature, but of ourselves. The human race is challenged more than ever before to demonstrate our mastery, not over nature, but of ourselves." And this, you'll see, is very much embedded, this idea. She was hearing what Sri Ramakrishna, whether she knew anything about it, she was hearing what Sri Ramakrishna had to say. She was hearing the master's story. Most of you who have studied history are aware of Will and Ariel Durant. The late Will Durant was an American writer, historian, and philosopher. He is best known for The Story of Civilization, 11 volumes written in collaboration with his wife, Ariel Durant. They conceived of philosophy as a total perspective and sought to unify and humanize the great body of historical knowledge, which had fragmented into esoteric specialties. This is what they wrote. "A great civilization is not conquered from without until it has destroyed itself from within. For example, the essential causes of Rome's decline lay in her people, her morals, her class struggle, her failing trade, her bureaucratic despotism, her stifling taxes, and consuming wars. With regard to societies, does history warrant the conclusion that religion is necessary to morality, that a natural ethic is too weak to withstand the savagery that lurks under civilization and emerges in our dreams, crimes, and wars? There is no significant example in history of a society successfully maintaining moral life without the aid of religion." Many of you have probably become aware of a young philosopher. He's relatively young. His name is Charles Eisenstein. Charles Eisenstein is a 51-year-old American philosopher and author. His books include The Ascent of Humanity, Sacred Economics, and, most recently, The More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible. The More Beautiful World Our Hearts Know Is Possible. Eisenstein is also a public speaker and a gift economy advocate. To understand the term gift economy, please watch the 12-minute film Sacred Economics on YouTube. It's worth your time. Just go to YouTube, type in Sacred Economics, and watch the 12-minute film. It's really quite remarkable. So this is part of what he has written recently. You could ask, why are people attracted to narratives that justify the terrible things that we're doing to the planet? Why are people attracted to narratives of control and fear and hunting down the terrorists and this uncaring attitude toward nature? These come from what I call the perceptions of separation and the experience of separation, the experience of alienation, the experience of scarcity and anxiety and competition, and a world in which everybody is out for themselves and nobody cares. How do we change that world? Change the story. How do we change our world? Through spiritual practice, we change the story that we believe about who we are and what the world is. The Master's story, Sri Ramakrishna's story, is indeed different from the one that is failing us now. Here's what he wants us to understand and share with him as our world view, as the story we hold in common. This first quote is from the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. It was the date on which it was given is Sunday, December 16th, 1883, toward the end of his life. In other words, this was a very mature reflection from the Master. He said, A person sees a thing one way through reasoning, and in an altogether different way when God himself shows it to him. The Divine Mother revealed to me in the Kali Temple that it was she who had become everything. She showed me that everything was full of consciousness. The image was consciousness. The altar was consciousness. The water vessels were consciousness. The door sill was consciousness. The marble floor was consciousness. All was consciousness. After realizing God, one sees that it is he who has become the universe, living beings, and the 24 cosmic principles. Now, as we know, Swami Vivekananda was the one given the responsibility for interpreting these great insights of the Master. And so here's what Swami Vivekananda told us. He told us this about the Master's story. Ramakrishna's life was a thousandfold more than his teaching, a living commentary on the texts of the Upanishads. Nay, he was the spirit of the Upanishads, living in human form. Nowhere else in the world exists that unique perfection, that wonderful kindness for all that does not stop to justify itself. In other words, it doesn't argue for itself. Nowhere else in this world exists that unique perfection, that wonderful kindness for all that does not stop to justify itself. That intense sympathy for man in bondage. He lived to root out all distinctions between man and woman. I'll repeat that. Think about this in terms of what we see in society now, the struggle that's going on. He lived to root out all distinction between man and woman, the rich and the poor, the literate and the illiterate, the highest and the lowest in human society. He came to bring about the synthesis of Eastern and Western civilizations. Indeed, not for many centuries past has India produced so great, so wonderful a teacher of religious synthesis. Here are more of the Master's teachings. The new story that he wants us to know and live as interpreted for us by Swami Vivekananda. If in this hell of a world one can bring a little joy and peace, even for a day, into the heart of a single person, that much alone is true. This I have learned. All else is mere moonshine. And by moonshine, he didn't mean, but could have meant, what's brewed in the hills of North Georgia. In other words, it's not the true thing. It is the reflection of the thing. It is all else is mere moonshine. If one millionth part, now imagine we're 7 billion or more on the planet now. If one millionth part of the men and women who live in this world simply sit down and for a few minutes say, "You are all God, O ye men, and O ye animals and living beings, you are all the manifestations of the one living deity. The whole world will be changed in half an hour." Now we know that Vivekananda was given to hyperbole to make his points. But can you imagine if everyone in this room, began to think, "You are all God, O ye men, and O ye animals and living beings, you are all the manifestations of the one living deity." Vivekananda says the whole world will be changed just by that much. Instead of throwing tremendous bombshells of hatred into every corner, instead of projecting currents of jealousy and evil thought, think that it is all he. He is all that you see and feel. He is all that you see and feel. Look upon every man, woman, and everyone as God. You cannot help anyone. You can only serve. Serve the children of the Lord. Serve the Lord himself if you have the privilege. If the Lord grants that you can help any one of his children, blessed you are. And this, of course, he summarized in the phrase that he learned from Sri Ramakrishna, serve Jiva as Shiva. Serve Jiva as Shiva. Do it only as a worship. I should see God in the poor, and it is for my salvation that I go and worship them. The poor and the miserable are for our salvation, so that we may serve the Lord. Give up the idea that by ruling over others, you can do any good to them. The new dispensation of the age is the source of great good to the whole world, and the inspirer of this dispensation, Bhagavan Sri Ramakrishna, is the reformed and remodeled manifestation of all the great past epoch. Is the reformed and remodeled manifestation of all the past great epoch makers in religion. So if Sri Ramakrishna is an epoch maker, where is that epoch? He has come and gone, and in many ways things seem only to be getting worse. That's the end of the quote from Vivekananda. So if Sri Ramakrishna is the epoch maker, where is that epoch? He has come and gone, and in many ways things seem only to be getting worse. Now, you can imagine, Swamiji's life ended in 1902. He foresaw what was coming. He predicted the convulsions that would happen in Europe, World War I and World War II. And now that those convulsions are gripping the whole world. Well, as you might imagine, Holy Mother also commented on this. Sri Sharada Devi's disciple after World War I, when India was still a slave to the British Raj, said, "Mother, you said the Master had come to change the world for the better. Yet look at the horror we see. Things are getting worse, not better." This was after World War I. "Mother, yes, my child, but see, when a seed is planted, the outside covering of the seed must become rotten before the new shoot can arise." Now, we know that's true. If an acorn falls, it just looks like this peculiar, kind of beautiful little bell-shaped thing. You can imagine that for an oak to arise from that, it must sink into the ground, it must be buried by rainfall and buried under leaves, whatever, and begin to rot before a tiny little oak tree can come. And this is true of a vegetable seed. It's true even of a dandelion that floats away and that tiny little seed at the end hits. That seed is the outside covering. The inside must be animated, energized. And for that, the outside husk must be destroyed. We are in that time during which the husk of the seed the Master planted is demonstrably decaying enough for the new shoot. Now, this is not Mother now. This is what I wrote. We are in that time during which the husk of the seed the Master planted is demonstrably decaying enough for the new shoot. The story he told us, the civilization that he wants us to share, the seed is decaying enough for that to emerge. For us, this is a time of great opportunity. The Master is so present, as it says in the evening hymn, "Breaker of this World's Chain." He is so present to unchain us and set us free. Here are some more of his lessons meant to ready us to revolutionize our minds and our characters so that we may share in the new story he left for us. These are all paraphrases or near quotes from Sri Ramakrishna. "When you get my message, reduce your reading and reasoning. Start practicing my instructions. The message is, find God. That is the only purpose in life. Truth is the austerity of this age. God alone is real. All else is illusory." But when this is said, we mustn't think that this means that God somewhere else, God is elusive because its manifestation is an illusory form of God. No, it means that this is all God, but we are seeing the illusion because of the way our antakarana, because of the way our processing capabilities work. We see it mistakenly, but God alone is real. All else is illusory. The practice of devotion to God, bhakti yoga, is the best method for pursuing knowledge of God at this time. The practice of devotion to God, bhakti yoga, is the best method for pursuing knowledge of God at this time. And then one of those great promises that the Master says, "Practice just a little, and someone will come forward to help you." By that, of course, he means himself, but really he meant the being that was behind the self that we see as Sri Ramakrishna. And he said himself that it was the Mother herself. He's pointing to his body. He said, "There are two here, the Mother herself and her worshiper." By that he meant Vishnu. As he said many times, "He who was Rama, he who was Krishna is present here as Sri Ramakrishna. As, no, he didn't say Sri Ramakrishna, as Ramakrishna. Who was Rama? Who was Krishna? Vishnu. They were avatars of Vishnu. So he said within himself were these ineffable beings taking this tangible form. Practice just a little and someone will come forward to help you. If the circumstances of your life make it unethical or impractical to renounce the world physically, you can do it mentally. And the instructions for doing that are spelled out very clearly in all four of Swami Vivekananda's books on the yogas, Bhakti Yoga, Karma Yoga, Raja Yoga, and Jnana Yoga. All four of those tell you how to renounce mentally. And then this is one of Sri Ramakrishna's key messages. Have faith. Put yourself in the care of a trustworthy divine being, your chosen ideal, and then don't worry much about your life and its adventures and misadventures. And as I said early in this talk, say to the Divine Mother, say to the Divine Mother Father, take my hand, pull me on, draw me near, fill this heart. Take my hand, ask the Divine, ask and ye shall receive. Take my hand, pull me on, draw me near, fill this heart. If indeed we take the Master seriously and we say this is the story that is a survival strategy for the time in which we are living and will continue to live into, if we take that seriously, we will be part of that millionth part that Vivekananda said. We must get beyond this idea of competition. Some people say, it's a dog-eat-dog world. Well, if you think about it, dogs don't eat dogs. Dogs do not eat dogs. If they are left on their own, if they become feral, they form packs like wolves and cooperate. Let's learn from that. It's not a dog-eat-dog world. The social scientists have proven over and over and over, and I mean by the scientific experimentation, they have proven over and over and over that cooperation is far more powerful than competition as a way to create success. Sri Ramakrishna has given us a spiritual frame for all this so that we understand we're not doing this to be good people. Yes, we'll be good people, but we're doing it because it is God we're dealing with. When the great Rishi said, Tattvamasi, that thou art. This is the same insight that Sri Ramakrishna is communicating to us when he said, serve Jiva as Shiva. When Vivekananda heard this and understood it, he said, I will take this message and use it to revolutionize the world. So this is an invitation this morning to be one of Swamiji's revolutionaries. to revolutionize your thinking and your character, embedding this idea that everything you see, most especially, as Vivekananda said, where shall we go to find God, if not in our own hearts and in every living being? Sri Ramakrishna said, find God. That is the only purpose in life. And Vivekananda responds, where shall we go to find God, if not in our own hearts and every living and in every living being? Every little bit, as Vivekananda pointed out, if you can make one person happy for one day, you've done so much. This has a ripple effect. And we are the ripples. We are the ripplers and we are the ripples. So this is my somewhat somber... I didn't mean it to be so somber. So he kind of came out that way. invitation to join Vivekananda in this. Now, please, what has this given rise to in you? What are your comments? What are your questions? What is the discussion we can have among one another so that we live out what is in our opening prayer? Let us study together the art of spirituality. What is this for you? How does it work for you? Yes, Brad.
Comments and a question. When you mentioned a dog-eat-dog world, Ray Kroc actually called this a rat-eat-rat world. So that's the view of an asura. Okay. But the question is, when you said, take my hand, draw me near, fill my heart, is that we can ask Thakur or Mother for that?
Absolutely. Okay. Absolutely. The divine presence, as it appeals to you, your chosen ideal. The divine... We never, ever, ever must limit the divine. What does it mean by eternal, changeless, infinite? This is the divine. It has no limits. So you can ask whatever it is. And remember, it's not out there. It's right here. As Vivekananda says, the transformation. When you pray and something happens, came from right here. And the goodwill of others. The golden web that unites us all. The answer to the prayer comes, but it isn't something that's outside. Yes, Brad, good question. Yes, in the back.
In part one of the talk, I think you had mentioned something about the sage Vasishtha was crying over the loss of his sons.
Mm-hmm.
And when Lakshman asked Rama about it, Lord Rama said, he who has knowledge is also ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
And I think subsequently it said that the only way to get out of the ignorance is basically being established in samadhi, not going in and out, if I'm stating it correctly. So my question is, what does it mean being established in samadhi? And secondly, if somebody like Sage Narad is still having bits of ignorance, how are we to, you know, overcome that ignorance?
Well, the first thing we do is we stop saying, I can't do it. That's the very first thing that we do. Is we stop saying, it's too difficult, I can't do it. There are obstacles. That's the first thing. As Vivekananda said, it used to be said that a man was an atheist if he did not believe in God. I tell you, you are an atheist if you do not believe in yourself. Second part of the answer. Every time you begin to practice contemplation, concentration, and it slips into that gray area between concentration and meditation, and bliss arises, that is samadhi. The knowledge doesn't exist somewhere else. It all exists right here. Vivekananda insists on it, and those people who are now studying the way the mind, the way this whole business of our consciousness works in human beings, they are coming to the same conclusion. We get a spark from outside and it somehow calls forth something from us. So believe in yourself. Start. Practice just a little and someone will come forward to help you. Now, if you want a definition of what is meant by practice, and this is more than practice just a little, but if you want to know what it means, Sri Ramakrishna said, I have done the full 16 anas. I have done the whole rupee. You have only to do 1/16. If you translate that into the hours of the day, there are 24 hours in the day. Divided by 16, you come up with 1.5. If you practice, if you start by 5 minutes a day in the morning, you expand that till you're doing 20 minutes, then more and more, because it's self-fulfilling. It begins, you begin to get that knowledge. It goes from a trickle to a gush to, in moments, you feel the full artesian fountain released in you. But if you'll practice 1.5 hours a day, 30 minutes three times, 2 times 45 minutes, you don't start off doing that right away. That's like someone trying to run the marathon when they are still just able to really trot a little. No, you work your way to it over a period of 2 years, 3 years. So we will experience higher and higher levels of samadhi. Sri Ramakrishna said there are thousands of kinds of samadhi. And they had that points to people's temperament, all kinds of things. So samadhi is not a... You can't measure it on a gram scale. It's something that emerges in you as you attempt to calm the mind. The calmer the mind becomes, the more full the samadhi becomes. And if Vivekananda remarked, if all the scriptures of the world were lost and only this remains, it could all be rebuilt simply from this. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. So the idea is purification of your mind and your heart. As you purify your mind and your heart, your mind becomes calmer. As your mind becomes calmer, the knowledge spontaneously arises. But as long as we're embodied, there will be ignorance because it comes with the package. And so Rama was saying to his brother, be compassionate toward Vasishtha. Sure, he has all the knowledge, but he lost his sons. Of course he's going to weep. Wonderful question. That's why the chatty answer. Someone else? Yes, Lori, and then someone in the back.
Chakra, could you please reread that quote from Joseph Campbell?
Okay. Would you like to just have a copy of the... Okay, well, I'll read it anyway. Pardon me for a few moments while I find it. So there's Tuckman, there's Carson. Here it is. We must let go of the life we have planned so as to accept the one that is waiting for us. Furthermore, we have not even to risk this adventure alone, for the heroes of all time have gone before us. The labyrinth is thoroughly known. We have only to follow the thread of the hero path. And that is belief in yourself. That is the core of the hero path. And where we had thought to find an abomination, we shall find a god. Where we had thought to slay another, we shall slay ourselves. Where we had thought to travel outward, we shall come to the center of our own existence. And where we had thought to be alone, we shall be with all the world. And if you'd like a copy of this, you're welcome to it. In the back.
Yeah, you mentioned about cooperation being what can get us there instead of competition. And the feeling is that it's because we have a scarcity in our heart that we think the pie is not big enough to share. Mm-hmm. If we can just get that abundance, that it's all there.
Yes, yes, you're so right. As the great philosopher poet Goethe said, a person sees in the world what they carry in their heart. A person sees in the world what they carry in their heart. So if they carry the idea of scarcity in their hearts, they'll see it everywhere. There'll never be enough. This is why misers are the way they are. Why these people who have $1 billion want $4 billion. If they have $4 billion, they want $16 billion. It's never enough because they're carrying that fear. So what happens when we practice spiritual disciplines? What happens when we pursue one of the four yogas? We begin to get a sense of what you were gesturing toward, Purna. There is, on Thanksgiving, I'm going to give a talk on the 18th. Yeah, that's 2 weeks. A talk called Giving Thanks. I'm going to play a song, a simple, beautiful song by a woman named Allison Adams. She's a local singer-songwriter, called We Have Plenty. We Have Plenty. Here is a woman who does not have that feeling of scarcity in her heart. She can write a song, a beautiful, believable song, We Have Plenty. And for those of us sitting here in this room, it's abundantly clear that we do. We have plenty. And Vivekananda and Sri Ramakrishna and Holy Mother are saying, now, let that plenty flow out from you. It won't go away. You won't lose by giving. Let that flow out from you in a kind word, a kind deed, a gesture, bringing some clothing and food for the food drive and clothing drive, just all of these things, little things. You don't have to give away all your money and go live in the forest. That's not the point. That's what about mental renunciation is so key. Anyone else? Yes, Uma.
Few thoughts arise as I listen to the talk. First is a question. All of these scholars, writers that you mentioned, I'm sure they must have studied Ramakrishna, or they must be aware of Ramakrishna Vivekananda's thoughts on these subjects. They must have read, I'm sure.
Two I can say for sure. Charles Eisenstein, the last one I read, the young man, and Joseph Campbell. Those two I know for sure. The other, Will and Ariel Durant, also, yes, they knew of this. Rachel Carson, I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised. But whether they all knew about Thakur and Vivekananda and Holy Mother, I'm not sure.
What I mean is, were they aware of the thoughts of Vivekananda?
They must have been. You know, Vivekananda, at the time of the bicentennial, 1976, 26 people were selected that had come to this nation from abroad that had a great effect on the thought current, the spiritual thought current, and the intellectual thought current of this nation. Vivekananda was one of those 26. And if we remember, on the 150th anniversary year of his death, two of the most influential papers in this nation had long articles about Vivekananda. One was the Wall Street Journal. Surprised the living daylights out of me. if you'd like to have a copy of that article, I have copies. The other was the New York Times. The New York Times published a 2-page spread on Vivekananda. So, yes, the ideas found their way into the web of thought and interaction of thought leaders. Yes, what else?
My second thought, is this a unique time that we feel that times are getting worse? I think ever since I was growing, I heard my parents say that, oh, we are living through the worst times. Those are the times of World War I, World War II. So that happened. And recently, I read an article in New York Times or somewhere that they compared the time of 68 in this country, 1968, when the Martin Luther King movement was going on, and terrible chaos and riots and all that were happening. So I'm not trying to say that we are uniquely feeling, is our time the worst of all, or has every age in their own time have felt that way?
The great teachers have come and tried to teach us a new story time and again. The talk here was to present not the idea that this is uniquely the end times. That's not the point. The point is that the story that we have been telling ourselves isn't working. Demonstrably, it's not working. You can see it all around the world. And here in the United States, the political convulsions that we're having are representative of the fact that our story isn't working anymore. If you want to know the details of how our story is not working, watch the films of Michael Moore. He really details how our story is no longer working. I mean, the fact that in Flint, Michigan, children are poisoned by lead in the water and it's still not fixed indicates that our story of how our society should work is not functioning. It's not, it's just not happening.
So, what is the solution? Just what Krishna said, yada yada hi dharmasya glani bhavati bharat. Whenever there is decline in religiosity, in goodness, I take birth from time to time, period to period. So now what we need is another Vivekananda, or somebody to shake the...
This is Sri Ramakrishna, dear. This is, by his own testimony, this is who Sri Ramakrishna is. I'm not saying you must believe it. I'm just saying this is what Sri Ramakrishna said. He who was Rama, he who was Krishna, is present here. He pointed to his own body. And so, and Vivekananda's entire body of work is all an interpretation of what Sri Ramakrishna taught him. So this is the wave of spirituality moving through the world. Again, we do not insist that anybody believe anything. The only request is that you take it in and you do your manana on it. This is the shravana we're doing together here. Now do the manana. Is there something going on? And as you said, Vivekananda's ideas, as he expressed them, have found their way into the thought and spiritual current of this nation. How much they'll have effect, how widely the effect will be. Certainly, if you look at the artists and the thought leaders, you'll find that they have absorbed these ideas and they're reflecting.
Need somebody to come again.
Sri Ramakrishna said he'd come in 2086. That's what he said. He said he'd come back, he'd take birth again.
We won't be around then.
But you're around to see that picture. All right? Sri Ramakrishna said, I am in that picture. He worshipped that picture because of his own presence in that picture. And I'm saying, and it doesn't matter. His picture, the reason there are so many pictures there is any of them will do.
Yes.
Put your heart with that one. Put your heart and your thoughts with that one and ask, and ye shall receive. It's been the experience of many, many, many. And what Vivekananda is inviting us to do is be part of that 1,000,000th part that he's talking about. Now, somebody who's better at math can tell us how many people 1,000,000th part of 7 billion is. But it's not that awfully many. And this is going on, this kind of conversation is going on in many places all around the world. If you want to just enjoy the Living Daylights out of yourself for a few minutes, go to the website of the Ramakrishna Mission in Brazil. It's headed by Swami Nirmalatmananda. I mean, they are just, Brazil just was, they just elected somebody who is apparently something of a throwback politically there. I haven't studied it. I don't know for sure. I just know what's said in the New York Times. But just in the same sense that we're sitting here in a politically chaotic situation, so they are sitting in Brazil. Go visit the website of the center in Gretz, France, or the one in Germany, headed by Swami Baneshananda. Not to mention all of the many, many ashrams of the mission throughout India. The reason this place, this chair is not being occupied by a Ramakrishna order Swami at this very moment is there's such a demand for them in India. Otherwise, when Swami Yogeshananda left, he would have been replaced by a Ramakrishna order Swami. Yes?
This kind of radical shift that happened back when Vivekananda visited the World Conference on Religion.
Mm-hmm.
He was the, historically, that was the very first time that I know of that a non-Christian missionary had come to the United States. So this kind of vast sea change, I think it started then.
Yes.
And the fact that even at that time, it was just before Teddy Roosevelt,
mm-hmm.
and we were still in the manifest destiny.
Oh, yes.
Of the United States, where we thought it was our destiny to rule, to save the world and rule the world. And yet, Swami Vivekananda's words were greeted with a wildly enthusiastic response at
yes.
the conference.
Yes.
That his perennial philosophy yes. truth woke up many Americans.
Yes.
And, I believe that tidal wave may still be forming.
It's interesting. I lived on the coast of California for a lot of years. Waves come in sets. They don't come one by one. Sometimes, very extraordinary. But usually they come in sets of three, four. But usually three. So we've seen the first wave. Or was the first wave Chaitanya? We don't know. Mm-hmm. But you're absolutely right about what you said about Vivekananda. He became the sensation of that World Parliament of Religions. People stayed, they put him on last every day so people would stay to hear him. It's true. They began to schedule him at the end of every day so people would stay. And he was asked then to stay and teach, and he spent the last 10 years of his life, seven of them were spent in the West. And he seeded a great deal here. A great wave came. Will there be another Vivekananda? Of course there will be another. He said himself that he would be born again. He said, I've fallen in love with these human beings. I shall come again. That's what he said. I've fallen in love with these human beings. I shall come again. He spent a long time, apparently, away from here, in whatever realm Sri Ramakrishna found him.
Brother Shankar, these days, such thoughts, such noble thoughts, are brushed aside like religious rubbish.
Uh-huh.
They don't matter as if,
They matter
thoughts,
here.
Yeah,
they matter here.
Yeah, yeah.
But each one of us then, who soaks this in, who does the manana and nididhyasana, we become a little beacon. We become a little radiant thing out in the world. In the back, you were saying something.
Yeah, I'm just finding out that it's become so widespread. I mean, because of the news and the media and the social media, it's like we only, they focus on the negative and we just see that. But when you go and go around, you see, even in India, I mean, it's in younger and younger people are doing it. And yes. It's so surprising to see that what we started so late, they at once know. They're so truthful and so everything there. So I think it's changing a lot of hope.
If you want to know what she's saying about the young people, go to the Pew Research Center. You can find it online. PEW, Pew Research. And see how different the last of the old story people apparently were the millennials. That generation that is now in its 30s to 50s, something like that. They're the last. The new young people, very different. They're still doing research on just exactly what this is and what it means. But they definitely are not. They're the ones who are more accepting, loving, unifying. They see themselves as part of the world, not part of just some little narrow thing. They identify with their sisters and brothers all over the world. And it is a remarkable thing that seems to be happening. Yes, Dr. Mudge.
I think to wait for someone like Vivekananda to come back so that we grow from inside is not a good thing to do.
Right.
Because my whole idea is we all have been blessed with an internal core of wisdom.
Yes.
And that wisdom, like some of the microbes, they form a spore wall around it. So that with that spore wall, it is locked up inside, never germinates outside. Each one of us has been given. Otherwise, who made Vivekananda this smart also?
Yeah.
Who gave him? What happened to our sister? What happened to Yajnavalkya?
Yeah.
So my whole point is that we are carrying our own core of wisdom, which gets covered, dusted, shredded, and from time to time somebody comes and takes off. For example, I was in the Walmart, okay? In the Walmart is a corner that says, center of vision. And I said, would you center my vision? No. That means you come here, and this is what most of the people, scholars, are also doing, that if you can see at this distance, which we have shown you, and then if you can read, your eyes are okay, go ahead. That is all. See, with a real good vision, you don't see 20/20, you see 20/20. You go beyond your visual range.
Yes.
For which you do not need these eyes. You need an internal eye. And that's the internal eye we all are equipped with.
Yes.
But we somehow, ignorance, or sometimes the outside conditions, when they are very favorable, then we become too secure.
Yes.
That's how the Roman culture, for example, was lost.
Right.
Grecian culture was lost. Because all that way, you know, they collected knowledge. Greeks collected a lot of knowledge.
Yes.
But sometimes, even the knowledge is very blinding.
Mm-hmm.
What we want is not knowledge, but wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Wisdom is the inner core.
Yes.
Of the knowledge in which we understand that this knowledge also can allure you and cannot take you in the right way. But when you get out of that one, which I think each one of us can do anytime in this lifetime, provided we take away these glasses or we say, I want to see beyond my glasses.
Yes.
And which we are, because it's risky, it's perilous.
Well, you're so right. We don't. We should not wait for someone else again. We don't be waiting. It's being said. It's being echoed all around us all the time. And one of the things that just lives in this is Swami Swahananda stopping and looking directly and saying, we are each called upon to be a Christ.
Yes.
We were walking together and he stopped and we were talking about Christ and he suddenly stopped, turned very directly. We are each called upon to be a Christ. To bring that core of wisdom, as you said so well, Dr. Mudge, bring that core of wisdom out into the light and let it shine, you know, let it shine. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. This is a Sunday school song in Christian churches. This little light of mine, I'm going to let it shine. Yes, Robert. Wait a minute, Raj. I didn't see you because I'm blind in this eye. Okay. I saw Robert first. No, so we'll get there.
If we have forgotten or don't remember that we are God, what else have we forgotten?
Yes.
If maybe that our thoughts that we feel that things are not going correctly could be deluded or incorrect. So my thought is that we have to start back at the beginning. And if we get that right, then we may be able to get the next thing right. Mm-hmm. The next thing and the next thing.
Mm-hmm. Very well said. Yeah. And we will eventually, if you're right, this is the testimony of the saints, we will eventually see only perfection. But in the meantime, when we don't, we must react appropriately. We must react appropriately. We cannot pretend that we see perfection when we don't. And so we have to react with compassion. And one of the ways to do that is, as Vivekananda points out so clearly, is just start seeing everything and everyone as God, particularly every living being, and serve that living being as God. Hang on just a minute. Wait. Uma, I have to keep my promise to Raj. Raj?
Okay. Well, I was thinking that the time of Swami Vivekananda and before, even in India, 1857, you know, the British took over that time. And now look at the current. When I came here and went to college, there was no concept of diversity, promoting diversity, mm-hmm. cultural. Now I know two young people, they come from very poor background, totally. They're in the college, and they're experiencing so much cultural diversity, and college is promoting them to go and experience that. Not only that, most of the colleges also promoting them to travel abroad, which didn't happen in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And so as a result, I believe that what we're experiencing, what we're looking at, it's a reflection of old. I think the new is going to change because of all the new people coming up. They're not going to look at the same way what is seen, or somebody sees like the recent incidents of killing people in a Jewish temple, for example, it's ugly, of course, but I think the young people are not looking that way. So the things are definitely going to change.
Right.
And I think that cultural diversity is so much promoted in educational institutions, small or big, everywhere, which is going to bring much unity.
I agree with you entirely, Raj, that there is a wave, as the gentleman back there said, there is a wave that's moving through the world. There's no two ways about it. But I'm not talking to young people here as I look around. I'm saying there are some young people, yes, wonderful, but you know, by and large, we're past millennial age, most of us. So I'm saying, let's be more like those young people. Let's hear what Sri Ramakrishna's call says to us now. And let that little light shine. Let that little light shine. If ever there was a quote that deserves repeating, it's the one that Vivekananda said, if you make one person happy one day, you've made a difference in the world. It's a significant thing. And we can all be part of that if we're mindful of it day in and day out. Jaima.
Here's a question.
Mm. Yes.
I've been doing a lot of research here and there, and
people who are doing a great deal of research in the history of the earth, going to ruins and reading Sumerian tablets or whatever mm-hmm. it is they're doing. And this is several different people, so I can't say he or she or name a name, but they each have come up with the statement that we have forgotten who we are.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's real important that we allow that to come into our awareness.
Mary, thank you for bringing that up. Thank you for bringing that up. Uma, you had something else.
Yes, I just wanted to add this beautiful thing that what we are hearing here and listening and believing in. But all these ideas, and I'm also glad that some young people, millennials, mm-hmm. are also coming into this way of thinking and believing. And so part of me wants to hold on to that idea that yes, things will get better because there is all that, you know, divine thinking and desire to change the things that mm-hmm. need to be changed. But my point is, until somebody is there to bring all these ideas together and take leadership and move and shake the world and bring it back to the...
You do it, Uma. You do it. Don't wait for someone else. You do it. You know all these things. You do it. You be that leader. Don't wait for someone else. I mean, we can't wait for someone else. We have to do it. And as Vivekananda pointed out, it wasn't part of the quotes that I read. It's a different talk. But he said, when you are pure, you don't see evil. It's like Robert said, if we see thief because there's still thief in us. We still see murderer because there's murderer in us. Now, it's inconceivable for us sitting here to be that person who doesn't see thief or doesn't see murderer. But Brahmananda said, I open my eyes and I see only Rama. I have to bring my mind down from that state so that I can teach you. He has to bring his mind down to the state where there is something less than perfection. He opened his eyes. He said, I open my eyes and I see only Rama. Rama in the thief, Rama in the murderer, Rama. But can we say that we honestly share this with him? Of course we cannot. So we have to be honest about who we are. Like Sri Ramakrishna said, the last thing, the very last thing that any of us should ever be is hypocritical about who we are right this very moment. I see thief. I see murderer. I see this. What does this mean? More work to be done. But in the meantime, I have to react and act. Not react. I have to act appropriately to what is seen. And that's why this talk today, which is transformation. Yes, Dr. Munch.
You know, connecting what you say and what you say about the people who explore the nature, who explore the earth, who go away from everything, observe it, I just came to know by reading one of them, they introduce two terms, timefulness and timelessness. So in what we are talking about, the eternity is timelessness.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else that we discuss and they are surrounded with is timefulness.
Mm-hmm.
Even age is a timefulness. The people who are young today and who are doing these changes are going to be old 80 years from now, 50 mm-hmm. years from now. So that is going to be constantly change. But within that is an element of timelessness.
Mm-hmm.
And if we recognize what that timelessness is, then we'll put our money there rather than on the timefulness.
Yes. Well... You know, the some here?
Yes. What the comment that you made to Uma to be the Christ, Gandhi put it so eloquently, be the change you want to see in the world.
Yeah.
Other than that, I also wanted to say that Laurie asked you to repeat Joseph Campbell's quote, and it was really worth reiteration that lose the past to get the future. So, I mean, that's my paraphrasing, a very loosely paraphrasing, that you have to let go of the past to get mm-hmm. the future.
Yes.
My question is that is that why, as Brother Brewer was telling us, that all monks perform their funeral rites to get mm-hmm. let go of the past completely and mm-hmm. then start anew on the journey towards perfection? So in the mortal, in our mundane lives, how can we, without renunciating everything, how do we perform the metaphorical funeral rites?
Well, two things. First, come and talk to me about this privately so that we can talk about your particular circumstances and your particular life. The generalization is that we take a stand for the truth. We take a mental stand for the truth. And we say, I know. Sri Ramakrishna used the metaphor of the young girl who comes from a village far in the distant part of India to the city. And she goes to work for a rich family. And of course, she begins to say, oh, isn't my Hari so sweet? And this is the child of the family, isn't it? And isn't this is my where I live? This is so grand, and so on. She begins to act as if, because that's what's expected of her, that she commit herself to it. Act as if this is all hers, her Hari, her house, and so on that she takes care of. But Sri Ramakrishna says, in her heart, she's still in the village. That's where her heart is. We must take that same attitude. We are here. We are here in this adventure of being human. We, who's we? The divine presence. We're not human beings having divine experiences. We're the divine being having human experiences. And so we have to remind ourselves of that. When we remind ourselves of that, then we can let go of our attachment to things. We can't let go of the things themselves because they're part of our duty, part of our lives, part of our family, but all of that stuff, it's all real. And it is real. It is our satya for that time being. But mentally, we can know the truth and insist on the truth, take a stand for the truth. Satyagraha. You mentioned Gandhi. That's how he overcame the Raj, by insisting on the truth of the divinity in the beings that were oppressing the Indian people. It's such a powerful lesson. He overcame because he acted on that belief. He let that belief be what motivated him, not, and then, you know, first you cover yourself and then strike back. No. They covered themselves. They did not strike back. And they were jailed. And they were killed. And they were truncheoned. And they were, you know, all the horrors that we know. Still, satyagraha. Still insistence on the truth. Vivekananda says the truth is stronger than anything that overlays it. Insist on the truth. If you want to read where he says this in such powerful words, read his book, Inspired Talks. It's not his book, really. He just said these things after having Nirvikalpa Samadhi in June of 1895 in Thousand Island Park. But the book was blessedly found and brought to light by Swami Nikhilananda. Or was it Adishwarananda? Anyway, one of the two. And the East Side Center in New York. It is when these things are said, it sounds simplistic. it sounds almost simple-minded. The fact is, as Sri Ramakrishna pointed out over and over, it is simple. God is simple. But the way there is not easy. It's simple, but it's not easy. So, Dr. Mudge is nodding very vigorously. Thank you. That's great. Yeah, it is. It is. So we know the truth, we insist on the truth, and then we live our lives every day. And our minds escape us. And they go off doing whatever crazy things that they do. Even though we don't seem to be behaving crazily, our minds are doing crazy things. So we recollect our mind. We bring our minds back through contemplation, concentration, meditation, practice of these three, slowly and slowly practicing the principles of karma yoga. And this is not mine, it is yours, Lord. Everything I receive is your prasad. All of these ideas, we practice, practice, practice. Slowly and slowly, slowly and slowly, we are transformed. Slowly and slowly, we begin to glow. We begin to be different. Sri Ramakrishna's teacher of Advaita Vedanta, of the non-dual path, was a man named Tota. His full name was Totapuri because he was from the Puri monastery. Tota. He was a nangta, a naked monk. By his own testimony, this man, who had been delivered to the monastery as a boy and lived his whole life in the monastery for 40 years, someone who came there and had the karma, had the destiny of becoming a monk at one of the most powerful monasteries in India. It took him 40 years of concentrated daily effort as a monk. Now, yes, we can burn we can do that sannyas. We can do that sannyas ceremony mentally. We can say, I surrender it all to the fire of Brahman. I surrender it all. I'll do a talk on a prayer that's said at the Home of Fire that is about, thanks for putting that idea in. I'll do a talk on that prayer that says, I offer everything I am and everything I have to the fire of Brahman. It's simple, but it's not easy, because we are embodied beings in a very, very, very intense universe. The universe is not calm right now. It isn't just us that are turbulent. The whole universe is turbulent. As Vivekananda said, the macrocosm reflects the microcosm, and vice versa. Yes, excuse me, you're right. I didn't see you.
You spoke about Wall Street. People have a wrong impression about Wall Street. Wall Street gives very, very good articles. People think it's only business. It only doesn't talk about Apple and Facebook and IBM. Mm. If people go inside, there are very interesting articles pertaining to social life.
Yes, I used to read it every day in the 1960s and 70s.
So sometimes there are interesting stories even on the front page,
but not every day. I read it often.
There are 20 pages and there are very good articles every day.
Yes, yes. I was just surprised that they would pay that much attention to Vivekananda.
Me too, because it's business-centric. It's not a spiritual newspaper, it's business-centric. So,
Rohit is absolutely right. The Wall Street Journal is but you don't expect to find a long article about Vivekananda in the Wall Street Journal. Yeah. That's all I meant.
That's a surprise to me.
Yes, dear.
One quick comment. You said this may sound simple-minded, saying that how you go about finding spirituality. Is that what the Bible means when it says the meek shall inherit the earth?
Now let's go back and take a look at that statement. It's one of the most powerful statements in the Beatitudes. What does meek mean? Meek does not mean falsely pious and weak and no. A meek horse, this is a word that was used to describe a meek horse. A meek horse was one that obeyed its rider's commands, even in the most difficult circumstances. So what Christ was pointing to was those who will follow my instructions, even in the most difficult circumstances, will inherit the earth. They are the ones. And this word meek is much misunderstood. It's degenerated in its meaning since, and the Aramaic I don't read Aramaic, but it's said it's much more powerful, as he said. But it means a horse who will obey its rider's commands in the heat of battle. That's a meek horse.
Enduring
is one part of it, but it's much more the meaning is that will obey the commands of the rider, even in the most intense circumstances. So yes, the answer to your question is yes. That's what it means. But it's in that context. Those who will follow the instructions. And, you know, some summary was given of these instructions. This, if you want to get a look at it again, these notes will be online by Wednesday, along with the talk itself. So, and what I tried to do is just summarize. Sri Ramakrishna said so many things to so many different people. I just tried to summarize the most important things that he said to us that are the heart of his story. At the heart of what he's teaching us is how to think and how to live and how to be with one another. Yes?
Add to that, when you said the meek, the biggest essential thing that is in that is the meek is humble. It's like following God in spite of all the logical, mental mind tells us. Meek is being one, and in the most intense situation, you just follow the command. So here we're looking, finding God or finding ourselves in spite of everything. Seeing all our imperfections, but seeing the goodness and all that in spite.
You're absolutely right. To connect the two is, and to connect it to humility, it is said that humility is the true hallmark of the spiritual aspirant. Humility is the true hallmark, and so yes, to connect that with the meekness, you know, I will humbly not follow my own volition. But I'll follow the instructions, even in the most trying circumstances.
Without ego.
Well, actually, as Sri Ramakrishna says, it's with a transformed ego, with a ripe ego, not without ego. As long as we're embodied, we're not going to be without ego. Once you achieve Nirvikalpa Samadhi, God bless it. Then there's no question of ego because there's no one left to have an ego. There may still be an embodied being, but that is just to teach. That's the only reason they stay. How wonderful a discussion. Anything else before we go? All right. Thank you so much for participating in this. This is where we really learn from one another. This is great. Okay, we'll close with this wonderful peace chant. Again, the translation is Swami Yogeshananda's. Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in outer space.
Let there be peace in the sky, on the earth, and in the waters.
Let there be peace in the sky, on the earth, and in the waters.
Let there be peace in the herbs, the plants, and the trees.
May there be peace in the earth, the plants, and the trees.
May the gods be peaceful.
May the gods be peaceful.
May the whole universe be pervaded by peace.
May the whole universe be pervaded by peace.
Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being.
Let this infinite universal peace prevail throughout my being.
Om shanti, 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 peace, peace, peace be unto us and to all beings everywhere. What a great prayer that is. Peace unto us and to all beings everywhere. Now, if that actually happened, according to Swami Vivekananda, the universe would disappear. If there were no vibration, that's his peace, if there were no vritti in any citta anywhere, the universe would disappear. Isn't that an amazing thought? We're creating the universe. We and all the other living beings in it. We are Jagat. So, thank you so much. See you inside.